A long time ago, friendly conversation out of the blue wasn't so unusual.
My mother used to say to me, she'd say, "In this world, Elwood, you must be oh so smart or oh so pleasant." Well, for years I was smart. I recommend pleasant. You may quote me.
But the kindly Jimmy Stewart from the movie Harvey might seem more like a creeper today.
Now Kate was playing in her yard when a man pulled up in a very nice car. He said,
"Hey little girl, I've lost my dog. If you help me find him, I'll give you this doll."
We are smart, we know what to do. We're gonna say no to you.
And so from messages like these received as kids, we all learned to remain silent in elevators, airplane departure lounges, silent but for the screaming of toddlers, eye contact on the sidewalk, don't do that. Writer Keo Stark thinks this habitual silent treatment among strangers is a big mistake, and she means to open folks up to the potential lifelong friend sitting right next to you on the bus. When strangers meet, how people you don't know can transform you is her manifesto on the joys of saying more than just hello and have a nice day.
Most people learn not to talk to strangers, and I actually grew up in a family where pretty much everybody talked to strangers all the time, and I was certainly taught not to go anywhere with a stranger, but it was very much modeled for me that it was okay to talk to people, to say hi, how you doing, to get into street conversations. My father was a city planner and my mother was an emergency room nurse. So they talked to strangers for their jobs and were very accountable to them. And I think that gave the whole situation a slightly different cast.
There's a lot of have a nice day going on in America, or have a blessed day.
Yeah.
Like that. How do you get beyond that sort of...
You know, what's funny is it's very different in different cultures, what's okay and what's not. And one of my favorite examples of that is that I've been told by a lot of Austrians that you would never ask someone what they do for a living, but you often the first thing you ask them is what their political affiliation is. Like, that's a good way to start a conversation, which in the U.S.,
that shuts it right
could
down.
Could be horrible. Yeah. So I think the thing is, you know, if you're in a situation where you're not in motion, you're not passing by each other, let's say you're sitting on a bench together or, you know, across from someone in a cafe, and you get the sense that it's okay to try to have a conversation, which you kind of get from body language and eye contact and what the other person is doing. But let's say, you know, something has opened up a tiny bit. For me, it's about asking an interesting question that has a real answer. If you say to somebody like, "What have you been doing today?" That gives them an opportunity to tell you something real and specific that you might actually be able to respond to.
The start is the hard part. But these days, I think talking to people who are strangers, particularly, you know, of different backgrounds, is a worthy kind of thing to do, especially now.
I absolutely think it is, too. And given the kind of climate we have at the worst end of hatred, but certainly of not understanding each other, of inadvertently insulting people, making them feel bad, making them feel diminished with the best intentions and not even being aware of it, the best thing you can do is try to actually get a sense of who somebody is who's different than
you. Take a risk. Take a risk.
Take a risk.
I mean, it is about taking a risk. And I'm amazed as a person with a disability just how shut down people are by, do you want to be called this or that? Or can I help you? Can I not? And I mean, I feel for them because I just, there's nothing coming from me.
Right.
But I think in the society, it's just like people are so worried about what they're going to say to someone who's not their race or a person with a disability or someone who has a scar on their face.
Yeah.
And my whole life, I've thought to myself, you know, I can just tell you an interesting story. If you ask me about it, I'll tell you a story.
Right.
And it just seems like the solution is right there.
Right. Right. Yeah. And I mean, you take a risk that you might insult someone, and if you see that you have, you apologize. But I think, you know, what you want to do is treat everyone like you would treat someone who is like you, and make sure that you're not ignoring them because they're different than you and you don't know how to respond to them or how to interact with them.
We also discover that they are like you.
Exactly.
That they all are like you.
Exactly.
There's actually nobody that's different from you.
Yes.
But I do think that at a time when there is a focus on racial suspicion and a sense of communities not trusting each other.
Yeah.
That this is an antidote. I mean, forget policy, forget presidential candidates.
Yeah.
This really seems like something that could help out.
Absolutely. And it's this thing of, you know, these tiny moments add up to something cumulatively that's really powerful. There are also, there's something called the contact hypothesis, which there are hundreds and hundreds of studies that were done by social psychologists in the field and also in labs. And it turns out that if you have a positive experience with somebody who's different than you, you like them and their whole category more, you're more open to them, you're more curious about them. So it's not only anecdotal and how you and I feel about it, it's actually something that has been studied and documented.
You know what is going to kill all this, though?
What?
Is the little earbuds. Social media and everybody staring at their phones.
Yeah, you know, people say that a lot. What I see is that cell phones have changed things in public space because people talk on their phone in public space. And so they're changing their sort of usage and dynamics. But since I started writing this book, I started paying attention on the subway and really looking around to see if everybody is on their phone or listening to music. And it's not even true. For me, I'm starting to wonder, like, why are we invested in this idea that technology is making us tune each other out? And I actually don't have an answer for that. Maybe you do.
Well, it's another book, that's for sure.
Yeah.
I think, forget the subway for a moment, because most people don't have the experience of the subway, which is a very specialized social experience. Does this work anywhere? Does this work, in a doctor's office? Does this work anywhere else?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, the thing about the subway and certain other spaces is they're transitional spaces. So you know that you're not going to be stuck in that interaction, whether it's positive or, you know, awkward, for very long. But in general, like in a doctor's office, yes, that's a great opportunity. It's also important to have what you could call an interaction shield, like a magazine or something, or your phone, so that if it's awkward, you can turn back to it, or the other person can signal that they're not interested by turning back to it. So it's a little bit subtle. But yeah, anywhere that you're waiting around with people, anywhere that you're stuck in line, at the bank, at the grocery store, those are all places where you could do this.
Keogh Stark, thanks so much.
Thank you so much for talking with me.
Keogh Stark is author of When Strangers Meet, How People You Don't Know Can Transform You. It's in bookstores now.